Very beautiful, isn't it? Yeah, bhakti generally means flowers and food. Because it's the way that love is expressed and felt by others. Is there a microphone here? Like, yeah. It's a little too loud. And then I have to sit here. And I'll tell you one story about that. After Prabhupada left, very young men became gurus. I mean, younger than all of you, like 27, 28, 29. And big gurus, like zonal gurus. So a few of my friends, we became worried, especially with a few of the people. We became worried. And there was one person in Europe that was getting big palaces. And then his seat was so high that when we'd have to go to his worship, like, you know, like my eyes were like this. So we became so concerned that we went to one learned Vaishnav scholar in Vrindavan. And we said to him, he's sitting on such a big seat. Will he fall down spiritually? And the saint was very, very close to me, and he was very realized, and he said something that really struck me. He said, he's already fallen. because that's what fallen means, on one level or another. Fallen means that you put yourself in the center and because you want to control and you want to enjoy. I remember when I was first to do this service, I asked the same saint whether I should do it. He said, yes, he said, but don't think you're guru. He said, do it as a service to your guru. So as a service, we do this. And what the service is, it's called, because there are a lot of rituals. Sometimes rituals get confusing. Sometimes rituals get bad names. Ritual just really means, real ritual means to conform yourself to something higher than yourself. It's putting your body where you want your mind to go. So in these rituals, etc., which we try to keep with their intent and not make them just empty, is Vyasa Puja means the worship of Vyas. Vyas is the original guru. And what was the quality of Vyas? He understood things and he realized it. And what does that mean? It means he understood them so deeply that he can communicate them according to the frame of reference of the audience. And I always say, without realization, one of two things happens. You keep it in the same form, even though no one can understand it. You heard it in English, you go to China, and you're giving a brilliant lecture in English. But it's not, you know, language is not just to another dialect. Even within the same dialect, people understand words, understand things in different ways. So Vyas means that this message coming from Krishna is realized. And realize means it's communicated without losing the meaning. And two ways you can fail is you keep it in the same form that no one understands it, or you change the form to accommodate understanding and you lose the essence. So we worship on this day, the teacher worships his guru and the disciplic succession, and the disciples worship him. And that principle of guru. So that's the basic ritual, and there'll be a few mantras that maybe some people won't understand, a few things, but that's the basic thing that's happening now. And it's a very, very beautiful thing because we create community among commonality. And community is a very beautiful thing. And I think people that have come here year after year, they appreciate the community where there's a common ideal and you could leave your ego at the door. And that there's a center besides yourself. And how relieving that is, especially from your New York City where you got to defend yourself. You got to make sure that you're not too vulnerable. So, and then every year I have to give some, I not have to, I'd like to give some lecture. And I don't know if you call it a State of the Union address, those things that happen once a year where you try to communicate things. And I think kind of deeply a little bit before how to communicate. A little pressure on me this year, because last year everyone liked it. Bryn wrote me, I hit a home run. Athletes speak in kind of certain language that they can communicate. And I remember last year I was thinking what to speak, and I asked Arjuna, and he said, thank Prabhupada. So that was a very potent way to kind of begin things in gratitude. Nama Shreshtam Manumapi Sachi Putram Atra Sarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Uruparim Matara Gostatnatim. That we thank for all the gifts that we got, and we shouldn't minimize them. Even if everything in our life hasn't going perfect, we should see what this added. I always think myself when my father paid me the highest compliment. One day I was talking and he liked what I said, and he saw how he was living, although initially he wasn't so happy. And I have two brothers, and he paid me the highest compliment in the local vernacular. He said, "Son, I have three sons, and you're the only one with his head screwed on right." But I was just thinking, what was he referring to? What was he referring to? He's referring to the knowledge that I've gotten, which I wouldn't have had if I wasn't connected to the Guru Parampara. The knowledge I have that makes me understand myself, makes me understand things in relationship, tells me how to live. So, it's that knowledge. And I had a particular thought. You all know that, I hope you do, that I write every week. Prabhupada said we should write our realizations, and I write my realizations every week. It's a very kind of interesting phenomena how that works. I finish one, and then I begin to chant, and I watch how I see the world. How I see the world through what I've learned. In other words, I get a perspective where I can actually see something. And the way we learn is we hear from a source of knowledge and we think about it. Like it hits us, because knowledge is something very interesting. What knowledge is, or learning means, is you have a particular frame of reference. And through that frame of reference, some knowledge comes that allows you to peek a little bit outside of your frame of reference. And that's a wonderful relationship. That's the relationship between the teacher and the student. It's affection. So it enables you to see a little bit outside of your frame of reference. And then when you apply it, you not only understand it, you realize it. So being in a spiritual tradition and hearing things, and if you're, especially when you're writing, and you begin to notice that actually, through the things that I learned, I'm actually seeing things. You know what a realization is. We have them in different ways. We all have some type of realization. And I'm seeing things. And the first thing I see, I write about. So I had a realization that I was going to share with you about a book that I read, which is a biography of, not a biography, it's a memoir of one of my god sisters. And it was an amazing book, and I highly recommend it. The only thing I criticized, and I wrote to the editor, is that everything in this book was perfect. You have such a lousy title. 5 years, 11 months, something, something. But what it is, and I'll tell the story, and I'll tell you why I think it's relevant, and it's relevant because I want to speak something to explain what's called guru tattva, the subject of guru, and what its importance is. And so this book, how many people saw the film Hare Krishna? They also got the title there. They wrote that title. The mantra, the movement, and the Swami who started. You saw that. Well, the person who did it, one of them, it's Vishakha and Yadobar. So she tells her memoir, and it's a very interesting memoir. She's from New York. She's from a real atheist family. Right, yeah, her brother was in the SDS, the Students for a Democratic Society in Columbia, who took over the university. She's brilliant. She's the 60s. So that kind of culture, that type of mindset, etc. And feminist, not in putting any term one way or another, feminist, she had that type of view. And it's not the kind of person, I think, that would walk into the Hare Krishna temple. That's what I'm saying. But she goes, and she's already accomplished. Nandini, yeah. Joseph, would you like to sit down? You're okay? You sure? Okay. Anyway, get him one seat there. We can. Okay, thank you. Okay. We have special things for people that are senior citizens. So she's already become like an accomplished photographer. She has some mentor. I mean, she's already got. And then she goes to probably the best school for photography, Rochester Institute of Technology. Why? That's where Kodak was, Polaroid, all the she enters the school, and one of the graduate students was her soulmate. Obvious was she met her soulmate, and he was kind of in the photography, etc. And they fall in love. There's even a scene where they're rolling down the hill together. That's about as raunchy as it gets. They're rolling down the, you got to put a little something in to keep the reader. And it rolling down the thing. And then it's really, she meets the man of her dreams. And he happens to have an assignment to do a photo essay on the Hare Krishna movement. And then he winds up in India. And then, he goes and he meets the devotees and he gets pretty inspired. And then he tells her, this is great, why don't you come? So then she comes and you see it through her eyes. And you see this dichotomy between something authentic and all the obstacles surrounding it. And one of the main obstacles is what we call the saffron cardinals. This is saffron. I get that term. Janavi's father wrote a book on the guru-disciple relationship, and one chapter was called the saffron cardinals. It means when people like this get carried away. And not only that, it's even worse than that. They're not only saffron cardinals, but they're celibate and 23 and not really qualified for annunciation. So it comes out in a kind of lust and anger. And she's describing this, you know, describing, and you know, but she's kind of in love with this guy. I mean, she's ready to leave at any minute. And there are things that happen that she's almost out the door and packing her bags. And then what's amazing to me is it's called 5 years, 11 months, I think, because what happens is through all this, she sees what she sees is the truth, even though there was so many obstacles to it. And it happened to be with her relationship with Prabhupada. Even though among the obstacles are not only the people that represented, although there were people that were stellar examples of what is bhakti, like Jamuna Devi and others. So it's always kind of a mixture. It's the world. When you ever throw anything together, you'll have a mixture of different modes, different types of people. We have false egos. Other people have false egos. And sometimes that little part in one person corresponds with the little part in us. And so many things are happening. And what happens is, and also, there's not all the philosophy. She can accommodate at once either. There's also challenges there. But somehow or other, through all of this, she surrenders fully to Krishna. So I think if we can understand why, then we can understand what guru tattva is. When we say guru, we don't just mean a person. We mean a person who represents something and something comes through that person. But I think if we can understand, so I've been just thinking, like, why? Because it was such an amazing thing to me. And, you know, if you know Vishak, she's so intelligent also. And she's a very analytical person. She, you know, so, but somehow or other, she gives her life. So I thought if we can understand that principle, we'll understand. So I was thinking about it, and I wanted to put it as this, and I think it'll help us understand the principle and what's happening. What was it in Prabhupada that enabled her to overcome all those other things? That, and I put it like this, that Prabhupada had no agenda. She met someone with no agenda. And, you know, what is an agenda? It's something selfish. An agenda is, you may have thought, agenda means something selfish. He had no agenda. And that was kind of keeping her glued to this whole thing because it was so dynamic. And not only have, and I would put it like this, I thought of a phrase. There's my willing and thy willing. My willing and thy willing. Here was a person that was following thy willing rather than my willing. And thy willing can also include my willing, by the way. The truth may also accommodate our attachments. We do things because we need to do things. You know, they're part of our ego. There's also things we do that are connected to who we are in this world, what our attachments are in this world. And that's also maybe the truth. It's not the truth because we're attached to it. It's not the truth because we like it. It's the truth because it conforms to something that's the truth. So thy willing, it's just following And it's a beautiful thing, thy willing, to be connected to something great. And if you think of people that you don't like, it's because they're so heavy on the my willing and so little on the thy willing. We love people that follow principles. And principles are not dictated by what we want. Principles are dictated by what is right. So she saw that. She saw that in Prabhupada, that absolute integrity. And not only that, when you are free from personal agenda, then you have the neutrality to understand truth and realize it and then communicate it with a conviction. So there was this experience that she went through, and somehow or other, it enabled her to go beyond what her limited frame of reference is. You know, what is the truth doesn't conform to what the way we see it right now. Even things that we're sure about, by definition. That's why we have to be faithful. Two things in Krishna consciousness is so important. Faithfulness and thoughtfulness. If you're not faithful to a teacher who you feel knows the subject better than you, you can never go beyond your own limited frame of reference. You're stuck. You're stuck wherever you are. And if you're not thoughtful, if you're not thoughtful, then in the name of faith, you'll be accepting things if you're not thoughtful, then you'll be accepting things as true, which are just your projection of what is true by your nature on what you're hearing that is true. If you're not thoughtful, that's why Prabhupada said blind following is condemned. And therefore, there's always dialectic in spiritual life to actually, and therefore, if we don't understand things, but we're connected with a body of knowledge that's revealing truth to us, improving our life. If there's something we don't understand, it's fine. We don't have to say it's wrong. We just say I don't understand. In humility, understanding that what is truth is beyond what we see it. And if you're living a progressive life of knowledge and learning, then you'll have that experience throughout your life. You'll have every year, you'll have an aha moment. Every year, you'll see something that you never saw before. And you'll go like this, aha, you fool. It should be every year like that. So this is the principle. The principle of someone who's very faithful and very thoughtful. And therefore, what's that verse? Tadvidi pratipatena pariprasnena. Pariprasnena is upadekshana gyaninasta. Someone can explain the truth because he's realized it and seen it and communicate it. And he's not blocked by some agenda. And there's a potency to that. And the thing is also, it's not enough to speak truth. We have to see truth in the lives of people. Because it's so hard to understand. Otherwise, we hear something and we project on it and we really don't understand it because we have so much conditioning, even in different words and things, how words are used. Words can get a bad name. You know, I know one guru was, he was named something like, he had the name Bhagavan. then, you know, you wouldn't want to name any of your disciples Bhagavan, because, you know, it's kind of, you ruin the name. I know one guru that he gave someone sannyas, and he wanted to reclaim the name. So he wanted to give it to a good person. So that's the principle. And because Prabhupada had that sincerity, that integrity, he was ready to surrender to truth. That was it. There was no other thing but truth, no matter how difficult. That's the most beautiful thing. When someone can live a life just based on principles, based on sacrifice, connected to the absolute truth. And then, so what's the story of the parampara? So, and how did Prabhupada get that? He met his own guru. And it's called the Bhakti Lata Beej. There's a very beautiful verse. It says, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. It says, we're wandering from universe to universe, from species of life to species of life, until by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we get the Bhakti Lata Beej. And what's the Bhakti Lata Beej? It's a conception. It's a conception of reality. And what's that reality? Thy willing. Thy willing means there's something greater than ourselves that we're part of. And that's what humility means. What does humility mean? Humility means that we can accept that there actually is a higher authority than ourselves. And sometimes we feel that's exploitation. That's not exploitation. There's a higher authority in ourselves that, and we don't like people whose only authority is themselves, that they don't conform to any principles. It's a very beautiful principle. Just think of a family where, you know, I don't know, intact family. So rare today. You got family, you have to say intact family. It's actually proper fathers of fathers, a mother's mother, yeah, whatever the case is. And then the children follow their authority. And what happens? It doesn't mean, let's say, and the parents, the children follow their parents who are more mature, are in a tree. What does that mean? It doesn't mean the children don't eat pizza anymore, right? It doesn't mean they don't get ice cream anymore. It doesn't mean they don't play anymore. But it's guided by thy willing. I remember one time, good parents, you know, Tamal Krishnamurti, his brother and his wife, and they're on, professors, they're on sabbatical, so they want to invite me to the NVT to take this to prasadam. So their younger daughter, they had three children, she's so intelligent. So after the meal, she says to me, would you like, a little girl, she was six, she said, Maharaj, would you like to have some ice cream? And I said, yeah, sure. And then the father started laughing. And I said, what's the matter? She knows that in our family, it's Wednesday, you only have ice cream on Sunday. So, it's not that you don't get things, it's not that you don't, but it's from a higher order. You're connected to something that's and that's also harmony. Because if you just center yourself, you're in conflict. There is a universal harmony, and that's represented. And how to live it, and the knowledge by which we can attain it, we can actually become peaceful, we can actually develop love, because there's only my living, my willing, there's no love. There's something higher. So what happened to Prabhupada? He met his guru. He was a young man, and his guru, you know, he just felt it and he saw it. And not just a person, but it came through that person. And then he became inspired. And what is Prabhupada? He was 100% faithful to the order of his guru. But what does that mean? 100% faithful to live his life by truth and to be connected to the highest truth. So now let's take our own lives, and we'll describe your own history in terms of my willing and thy willing. So how many years were you living by my willing? How many countless lifetimes? Millions and millions of lifetimes in species of life, universe to universe. And then something happens at a particular time. And I think it's like this. My willing doesn't work. The platform of selfishness doesn't work because it disconnects you from the soul. You're only happy on the platform of the soul. And the soul is anything but my willing. The soul is consciousness that reaches its fruition in love. And when we live that and we reach it fully, then we're satisfied. So what happens? We were living my willing, and that's what the evolution of the species are. You get a variety of flavors. And then you come to the human life, and you have karma, and there's a variety of flavors of my willing. And then what happens? I described this last year. At a particular time, you have to come to the consciousness, this doesn't work. This doesn't work. I become this, I become that, I've gone to the top, and I'm ruling a country, I have billions of dollars, I have this, I have that. It just doesn't work. And if you come to that platform, and then within that spirit, a thought comes in your consciousness that there must be something higher than just what I want. There must be something higher than my authority. There must be higher than what I want. There must be some truth that's higher than what I want and that's better for me. And when that happens, then our consciousness, which is covered like by a cloud, our consciousness, which is covered like a cloud, and we can't experience. I read in the Bhagavatam a very nice verse. It said that the body of God emanates transcendental pleasure. And I think what that means is that when our consciousness comes in contact, it awakens our soul, which is actually the satisfaction. That's called religious experience. There's something that awakens that's not egotistical, that's not sensual, but something awakens in you that becomes your faith because it's so much more harmonious, it's so much more satisfying, and it's so much more intensely pleasurable. And that awakens. So what happens is, somehow or other, we're covered, but the world will just open up a little space between our soul and God, like a cloud, where an opening in a cloud just allows a little sun in. And when God sees that, then he arranges what's called sadhu sangha. And then that's what happens. And then we come in contact with a sadhu by Prabhupada's mercy, by Prabhupada's books, by Prabhupada's teachings in the Western world in so many places. We come in contact and that touches our heart. And that's where we are now. We've somehow or other come in contact with the representative of thy willing, to convince us that that's actually a better life, to teach us how to do it in a way that works through where we are at the present moment to move us forward. And then we're faced with that choice. And we're constantly faced with that choice. And I'm also faced with that choice right now. The voices of thy willing, the voices of my willing, thy willing, my willing. And what does it do? It's connected, though, because what represents thy willing, which is the platform of devotion and love, my willing is the platform of selfishness. What represents that? What represents that, but my own life, it's Prabhupada. I came in contact. My heart was touched somehow or other. It opened up to feeling that the rays of transcendental pleasure emanating off the body of God gave me that conviction, then gave me the teachings of how you live your life to come to that platform and commit yourself to that platform, and then how to progress on that platform and perfect that platform. So this is the where we're all at. For some reason or another, in different ways, we've all come to the realization. We've all, everyone in this room, to one degree or another, has come to the realization that there is something higher than just what I want. And that there's an absolute truth. There's not relative, there is an absolute truth. We all believe there's an absolute truth that's not subject to circumstantial truth. We haven't evolved to a particular truth. There's a truth that's outside, that's always existing, and we all believe it. For example, there's certain things that are wrong right now that really upset us and we're angry with. Does anybody have anything they can think of that they really think is wrong? Raise your hand. Do you think it's evolutionary wrong? Or do you think it's always wrong?
Always.
It's always wrong. There's an absolute truth. There's things that are wrong that are not dependent on us, not dependent on opinion. It's not if many, many people vote that this is right. We don't believe that makes it right. We believe that it's independent. So there is an absolute truth, and we know there's an absolute truth. And we want to connect to that absolute truth. So that's represented in Guru Parampara. Because there's an absolute truth, and there's traditions that represent the absolute truth, and there's people who have studied that and lived the absolute truth. And we want to be connected to that. And that's my struggle. I know it every day. This is what I want, but this is what's right. And who's the person that's evolved in their consciousness? The person who surrendered to the truth. It's a very beautiful thing. So we're here on Vyasa Puja. So we're celebrating that. We're celebrating that principle, and we're trying to fortify that in our lives. By what? By studying books that represent that, by being with people who live that, by going to places, holy places, that exemplify that energy. And by living on that platform, living on the platform of the soul. And the main way we live on the platform of the soul is by Nam Kirtan. Because Nam Kirtan is an expression of the soul. I had one experience that made this so clear to me. I was going through a challenge in life. And what a challenge in life means is when the world goes against the way you want. That's what suffering is. Suffering is when the world moves against your attachments. That's what we how we suffer. And when that happens, and you have some spiritual acumen, you have no choice but to switch how you seek your happiness from your destiny to how the world moves around you, which you can't control, to your free will, to how you react to it, which you can control. So the world was moving in a way that was very difficult for me, and I had no choice but to take shelter of chanting the holy name. Had no choice. So I was doing it for hours and hours a day. Hours and hours a day. And then I had the realization that what I am doing. See, I know when I give meditation classes, one thing becomes very, very clear. There's this voice that's based on the false self of you, the controller and enjoyer. And mostly our anxieties, our fears, our ambitions, they're just constantly moving. And when we act on that platform only, it just fortifies this concept, the false concept of life, which is the basic platform of suffering itself. And then there's the real self when you calm your mind. Now, what's the real self? The real self is the soul, which has a desire to serve. So I was thinking when I was just chanting and chanting, and what is chanting? It's a prayer. It's a prayer to be, for service, the service to Krishna. When I was chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting, I got the realization that the person who's doing this doesn't end. That's the platform of the soul. The person who's doing this doesn't end. It continues. And the person with all these anxieties and this fear and that ambition and get this and get that, that's temporary. That's threatened always by non-existence. So in our practice, because the teacher, he sees the time and sees the best way in which you can overcome the false ego, practically, the false concept, I am the enjoying controller. So in our process, there's five most potent items that can awaken that consciousness. One, well, worshiping the deity. Actually, Prabhupada, so merciful. It's amazing, practically in every, we glorify great acharyas in our line because they've established a particular deity, like Rupa Goswami, Radha Govinda, and Sanatan Goswami, Madan Mohan, their songs, and Jiva Goswami, Radha Damodar, each a Prabhupada in every country, a deity. And what does a deity mean? It's putting something in the center besides yourself and seeing everything in relationship to that, rather than the ego. When you worship a deity, and you go to a temple, then that's the center, not yourself. And then sadhu sangha. You know, we're never gonna like everyone, no matter what religion we join. But we can find some people that are sadhu sangha for us. And what is sadhu sangha? Sadhu sangha is three things. More advanced, like-minded, and affectionate. So to finding sadhu sangha. And then hearing, I read every morning at least for a half hour, and I relish, not just so I don't intellectualize, I do it for transformation. I relish just being impacted with thy willing, with the truth. I just relish it. You know, just hearing the simple things that reaffirm the basic principles of life, I just relish it so much now. And then the holy places, visiting holy places, temples, holy dhams, where that energy is centered in another way and affects your heart. And then chanting the holy names. Taramajye, Sarva Shreshte, Nama Sankirtan, Nira Aparade Poya, Paya Premadan. The nine processes of devotional service. And the best is chanting the holy name, because if you can do it without offense, you can easily get love of Godhead. Prema Pumartha Mahan. So this is what comes in the teachings. And reading that book, I recommend it. There's great books that are coming out. Also, Chasing the Rhino with the Swami is also a good one, too. It's amazing. And just watching her, you know, with all the obstacles, so many obstacles, and seeing how that shines through, that there is a truth, there are people that live by that truth, the people that actually can explain it and communicate it, and that when you take those teachings and incorporate into your life, then you also change. So that's the kind of principle that we kind of celebrate today. And we worship the Guru Parampara. And not only that, we worship, we actually experience it. We experience where we can come together and leave my willing at the door and just have a day of thy willing. And what a relief. Because the worst place to be to experience pleasure, which is love, is in the center. And we think exactly the opposite. We're so conditioned. The person who is like this and is and they're like this, and these hands that have been used selfishly and now for the pleasure of God and others, and is like this and is feeling like this, when they hear Jai, 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 you're so great, they don't go, I didn't hear that, what'd you say? They like this. You can't move them from that platform. So, saying that, now let's start my worship. I don't know what this philosophy is, but actually, it's fun because somehow I play a role in this community. But it's the community. And the community represents something higher than obviously any of us, including myself. And when I come here in the morning, I actually would rather be in the audience. Okay, so Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.